Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Joining me on today's show is my good friend, John Osler. He's the co-founder of 8-Bit Studios. A little shout out to the rest of the team, Don, Brett, Steve, Polacek, and team. I was just on their podcast. It comes out in a couple weeks, Bites Over Bagels. We had John return the favor, come on my show. We talked about, among many other things, how Sean Rigsecker, the CEO of Centro, conned me out of a Tech Gachi win. I'll never forgive him for that. But we talked about a lot of other things. Really important, the difference between sympathy and empathy. And I think John summed it up better than most anyone I've ever heard, to be totally honest, and give him credit for that. Before we get into our interview with John, I'm going to check in with our Technori poll, which is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. Go beyond email marketing with true automation by signing up at activecampaign.com/technori. Get your first 2 months for free. You really, if you're not using it, you really are kind of foolish. It's an awesome product. I love the Deals app. Okay, here's the poll, and I want to tell you to do this on your own. Check out True Public. It's an app. It's a sweet app. Caban's been on the show. We're using it, loving it. The question I have for you is one that if you listen to my show or my live show on Saturdays at WGN, you already know my answer. But here's the question. Is college worth the expense? My answer? Well, he didn't have fuck no on there, but he had disagree or slightly disagree. I went with slightly disagree. I'm not going to say fully disagree that it is not worth the expense, but I am not going to say agree, and I don't slightly agree. I think that college is worth it if you flat out don't know what to do and you got to be sitting there. You should pick up a degree. There's socialization things. There's all kinds of things you can get from school, but the problem for me is I look at everything as a value prop. And for me, if I'm going to spend $87,000 to go get a degree for me, I'm talking about a one-year master's, but whatever your degree, $100,000, $200,000, whatever it costs you, I would hope that your takeaway is not what not to do or antiquated tools and things, and you're discovering problems that if you're me and you're an entrepreneur, you can figure out a way to solve them and get wealthy doing so. But if you're not, you're left with nothing. You're left with some networks, some socialization, and really not much else. I personally don't agree, but you know what? I'm not the only one out there. I think it's interesting. Only 15%, and it's, by the way, there's like 30,000 respondents, 15% of women and 15% of men strongly agree that it is worth the expense. 7% strongly disagree, 35%, 28% for men, 32% for women, are neutral on it, meaning they literally don't know. And that does not bode well for the education system. If the vast majority of your consumers are not sure whether or not it's worth paying to go to you, you've got a problem on your hands. Very, very interesting poll, very interesting app. True Public, check it out. Here is my conversation with the host of Bites Over Bagels and the co-founder of 8-Bit Studios, John Osler.
Do you remember when Scott said, I don't really feel like editing anymore, so then you guys stopped editing?
Yeah. And it turned out to be the best hook of the show, is that we can just do whatever we want. And it's like, I say to everyone on the show, if you say something terrible, that, you know, that I'll delete it. But I don't.
I want John Pletz to write about whatever I have to say in a bad way. Like, I want Technori to actually be my downfall. Like, completely. There it is.
The crowd approves. What do we have to do to get John Pletz to cover us again?
Is he out? He's not interested?
Well, you got to ask John. I email him every once in a while. I hear some ideas, and he's always busy. You know, I guess there's other things to cover.
Well, yeah.
Is there, though?
It's like, he's like a journalist. There's not many journalists out there. We're all peddling these clouds to people. Look at this beautiful disaster story.
It's so true. And the reality is, like with John and others, I talked to him about it, and he was like, you know, the whole PR model doesn't work. Like, we don't need PR. There's not enough journalists to cover the stories that there are. And I guess what I talked to him was like, oh, what do we have to do to be newsworthy?
Right.
I think it's just a huge exit. I don't know. I think that's all that there is anymore.
That's all that gets coverage anyway. It's like X team of like 200 people raised 20 million. You're like, oh, great. They have like a year and a half of runway. Do you guys realize what you're actually covering? Like, they're going to die.
There was a story about a year ago. Maybe it was a little more than a year ago. It was a big, big company. And they laid off a bunch of people and they got sued by their investors. And you know, they...
I know which company you're talking about.
That story got a lot of play.
Is that a shame? I don't know enough about... I don't have an opinion about that because I don't actually know what really happened or if there was just ignorance involved.
I think it's a whole bunch of everything. We don't have to make that the focus of the show.
I love that focus. Let me say one more thing about Pletz.
Yeah.
We interviewed him like 5 years ago, back in the like 1871's getting its feet wet, built in is like a Ning site. So this is like early days, I would describe, which is ridiculous.
This will determine whether or not I send this to him.
Absolutely. So Pletz is there, and he's super nice guy. He's the nicest guy alive. But he kept knocking on various woods and tables and things, and almost, I don't know if he said this or if the group started saying this and saying, like, is this mahogany? Like, he was, like, testing.
Smells of rich mahogany.
Yeah, totally. It was interesting. He's an interesting guy.
I think the whole...
I like that guy.
We'll start the conversation with this, because you guys have a podcast that you had me on. It comes out at some point soon.
Yeah.
And you've had a bunch of people, obviously Steven from Cameo and yourselves, and you guys did podcasts with me back in the day.
Back in the day.
And before that, you did podcasts of your own, which we'll talk about. But I think that it's worth mentioning that for good and for bad, the media is now ubiquitous to where I just read this article about, it wasn't just PR, it was founders, CEOs, everybody who wants press. Everybody wants press.
Yeah.
And there was, like, for the last 4 years, there's been like an arms race spending for PR, growth hacking, all this other shit. And in the end, it came down to the realization, and I heard this, I'll say the name, I heard this from Tom Gimbel. He was the one who actually told me to, like, put a light on it. He was like, the smart founders and CEOs will go on a show,
yeah,
and that'll be, it's not, like, not John Plutz writing something, but, like, an actual, like, you know, CNBC, they'll be on a show, yeah, which I would argue, actually, Plutz's stuff is far more real than that, but anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, if you talk to the host or the show person, you find out quickly that other than a handful, they don't make a whole lot of money. And if you go through CNBC or NBC or ABC or whatever, name your big company, media outlet, and you try to pay to play, or you hire a PR agency, you spend 10 grand a month plus to try to get little clips here and there.
Yeah.
You could spend less than $1,000 and offer that host to just record three or four little segments with you and put it on your LinkedIn without, like, you just copy the video overlay that is CNBC and just leave off CNBC and see how many people notice. Nobody. They all click on it and thinking it's CNBC, and it's like, for what you paid $10,000 a month for, I paid $1,000 for once.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And it leans itself into companies like Technori and companies like you guys who have found a way to create meaningful, good, fun, informative content, which doesn't need to be monetized directly via the content. If you can, that's a luxury.
Yeah, totally.
But you get to monetize your business through its normal means because you attract people in to your personality, which ultimately is your brand.
Yeah.
And that stuff, in a lot of cases, you're finding really big stories actually breaking on people's podcasts.
Yeah. No,
people
totally
doing product launch.
Totally. I was meeting with somebody who is a big player at one of the larger digital marketing agencies, and he described this this moment we're in as the blarg singularity. I think I'm quoting that correctly, where everyone, not only is everyone able to kind of be a, you know, a direct market consumer,
yeah,
but then everyone has some platform that's actually legitimate. It's more than just friends and family that they're pushing whatever content to, whether that's like an entrepreneur to like their LinkedIn network or, you know, somebody who's reviewing a product. It's like ubiquitous.
Oh, totally. I mean, there, it still is the standard. I'm thinking we sent our credentials to CES and they had the barrier, which was the same barrier 7 years ago, which was 10,000 uniques a month, which according to my stats, we beat. According to other stats, we really beat. And I'm thinking, I know people, like my Facebook has more uniques than that.
You have a great Facebook page.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
No, but like it it's not hard. Like they need to like step up the.
Yeah, yeah.
It needs to, like, there needs to be a little shrinking at the top, maybe, or maybe not. Maybe it's better that everybody has a ability to share their voice and,
yeah,
you know, fool for you if you pick the wrong voice.
Well, and I think you know, this kind of goes back to what the opportunity is, that because you have this critical mass, there is this opportunity for the cream to rise to the top. And I think that the irony is that before everyone had a voice, you had a few outlets with really high quality,
yeah,
and now you've got a ton of outlets adding noise of low quality, but yeah, there's still this opportunity. People say, well, I really want to like both the hosts and the guests and the theme and the, you know, the journey. So I like it from the standpoint of, I feel like, especially in the Chicago tech community, our whole thing has always been about how do we really capture the entrepreneur's journey. And especially 5 years ago, when you've got all these companies coming out of 1871 for the first time and a huge group of the job, the workforce coming out of boot camps, it's like nobody knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
Which is
great for me, because I could just jump in and pretend I knew, and then all of a sudden I was like, well, he's got a big mic, so you must know.
Oh yeah.
Well, no shit.
and probably the reality is nobody really knows what they're doing anyway, but the idea that someone would share this story and be like, hey, like, here's where I went through, hopefully you can like get some pro tips from that. And one of the outcomes of the last time we did this podcast, from purely just, we talked to, I think, 44 people in 44 weeks. I don't know why we did that, but, you know, this was like a side gig. And one of the overarching themes that came out, which is now much more obvious, is that Chicago was a B2B city.
Yeah.
And you had all these companies that started as B2C companies, because I think that's what everyone thinks of first.
You want
and
they're to.
Like, yeah. And they're like, we did this pivot, and now we're B2B. And we're like, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. Well, now it's like, we don't get taken seriously here in Chicago because we don't do enough consumer brands.
Well, but thanks, Cameo.
Yeah, thanks, Cameo. Thanks for putting us back on the map.
I'll take some credit on this. Steven launched his stuff on our show.
Oh, there we go.
So he didn't go to, people didn't buy into it.
I know.
And they're nuts. From the get-go, I thought it was a brilliant idea. I want to say, both speaking for you and for me in this, to your point about the cream rises, almost every good business works very hard on trying to create their differentiator. What are the barriers that they can sort of create? And to me, in the content business, and I've said this to my own team dating back to the original group I was working with at TechNexus, we have a built-in unfair advantage in the content realm, and I think you have it as well. The natural ability to just talk, the natural ability to think on your feet and come up with interesting things to say and be honest and authentic in how you do it, means that, yes, there will be 6,000 podcasts, and there have been, I mean, there's billions, but there's been at least that I can think of in my head since I started my first podcast, but just the Technori podcast, at least 10 that have popped up that are, I would say, are direct, I mean, some of them literally almost stole the tagline of one of the segments of the show. So literally knocked it.
Yeah.
And they're garbage and gone.
Yeah,
and right. The reason is that there's all kinds of operational, just like your business, 8-Bit. There are operational things, there's frequency, there's creating, you know, enough of your product to make it go around and continue to show that you're sustainable and blah, 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 which most of these guys and girls, you know, either didn't create enough shows or they couldn't pay for it long enough or they didn't have the time or whatever. But there's the one differentiator that they cannot copy, and that's just skill. Some people are naturally much better at it,
yeah.
And it doesn't matter how much editing you do. It's just not good. It doesn't come across well. And so for all the people out there who are like, oh, I'm going to start a podcast, I'm always like, if you want to pay me a consulting fee, I will take it. But I will pay you, pay me, I'll cash the check, and then I'm going to turn around and tell you, don't do it. because I'll save you a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
Because I can tell you just from this conversation that we're having right now that you're not a person who is going to lend well to getting behind the mic and turning that light on and being able to fire it up.
Yeah.
I don't know. Food for thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think for us is we found that, you know, it's, I mean, in the podcasting arena, it's the case that, you know, it's nice to have the person that has the more well-known journey on there from the company that everyone knows.
Do you have access to people who matter?
But I think what we've found is that the episodes that did the best, we just... very salient points were made, maybe three or four points, and people actually pulled from that. And now everyone's pretty smart. They take a pull quote from an interview and post it on LinkedIn, and it can get spun out that we're like, oh, that's really a good point. So I think, you know, what I think is great about what the market has become, at least for podcasts, is that we're seeing it as a commuter's market. It's like people, I mean, some people listen if their job doesn't require much brain power, but
which is most jobs.
I guess.
I mean, if you look at it, like a lot of, I mean, I have a lot of friends who they get a job that in their mind was very complicated when they got it. It was a goal, a dream to get there.
Yeah.
We just talked about this yesterday about the challenge for hiring talent. It's like everybody wants to work for Facebook or everybody wants to work for this big company. But if you actually talk to the people, with the exception of the high mover, super high achievers, most of them get there.
Yeah.
And then they have they have all the brain power. They have complete inability to impact.
Mm.
And they get bored.
Yeah.
And then they sort of automate their process and they just do their job. And it's something that would have blown their mind that they'd be capable of the position 5 years ago that they have today. And they spend the majority of their day listening to Bites Over Bagels.
Wow.
Because there's
wise choice.
It's a very, I mean,
indeed.
I can see why. I mean, I would get fired over it, but like, you know what I mean? But like, we've gotten to this spot where like, I almost think this is totally off the rails now, but we argue all the time about job security and not complaining necessarily, but there is definitely a pushback on the fact that no one works one job for 25 years anymore. They're going to be working, you know, 4 and 5 years or 2 years. I actually think that whether people want to look at it now and admit this, I actually think it's better, because I think the complacency in life comes from no challenges. And if you know that you really do only have a tread in this company for 3-4 years max,
yeah,
you make the most of it, yeah, instead of just sitting. If you sit there, you'll be at that job forever. That's a good thing, I guess.
Yeah, totally. Well, one of the things that I guess talking a lot more about, there's this book called The Power of Moments by Chip and Dan Heath. Do you know this?
I've heard it. You might have referenced it on the show. Even.
Oh, maybe it did. Maybe it did. But it kind of speaks to creating defining moments. And I think what's kind of interesting about even, you know, radio and podcasts and things like that, I think that people only remember so many things about their lives or days anyway. So the idea that there might be some nugget in some audio just while they're doing something else is huge. Because I think that's basically what everyone's looking for, is these like things that kind of really pique their interest or get their, you know, their juices flowing. And I think that's really an underappreciated thing. I mean, to your point about people who want to get into the podcasting space, I think it is the case that you won't be successful unless you can develop chemistry with people naturally in natural settings, right? And that isn't about that hard skill, which is a hard skill, or maybe it's a soft skill, but I view it as a hard skill, because at the end of the day, that's not the point. The point is to get comfortable enough with that person to be able to have that nugget emerge.
Yeah.
You know, because if it's awkward,
if they're on script, it's never going to,
yeah,
it's not gonna,
it's awkward.
Out.
It's like, it's just a talking point. Like, what are we actually trying to get to the bottom of here? Like talk about pieces of failure or things that you went through, or how, you know, how you grew up, how that affected some of the decisions you made. And I think that's, you know, that gets down to like human interest and things like that. But I think that's ultimately at the end of the day, what everyone's looking for is those, what are those like peak moments in your day, in, you know, how you categorize your life that end up defining you or defining who you think you are. And I think that's what's cool about this show. And to your point about people coming on, I think for most of the guests, they're only going to remember a few things about what they did that year. It's going to be the fundraise. And one of them is going to be, you know, coming on the show and talking about having a chance to have a platform to talk about what they're up to.
Yeah.
I think that's for that. That's an ability for them to really categorize, okay, here's where I'm at, and kind of put that little feather.
So I want to ask you a very poignant question as a result of that. But before I say that, I have to be honest. And for those who know all of the story here, I don't know if this is a good thing about me or a bad thing.
Uh-oh.
But you mentioned to the point of your book, to the book, not your book, but Chip's book.
I wish.
Yeah, right. I wish I was collecting royalties. Yeah. I totally believe in that moment thing, and I totally believe that there's certain moments in life that you have to be ready for, and if you're ready for them, you'll succeed. And then there are times where there aren't moments, and they're not going to be there.
Yeah.
So you have to figure out, how do I make moments come up for me? I still, to this day, and I've done it since I was in eighth grade when I first saw Wall Street, and I'm obsessed with the movie Wall Street, which is why I'm saying it's good and bad. It's both completely interesting, and you can see why you want to be, you know, a big time business person, but at the same time, there's also like this huge battle of inauthenticity and corruption and fraud and whatever. I'm trying to avoid that part. When I walk into a day where I know I've got a big meeting, still every single day, time that this happens, I'm dressed up, I walk into the mirror, and I pull a Bud Fox and go, life comes down to a few moments, bud, and this is one of them.
Cool.
I say it to myself every single, I get goosebumps. Yeah, yeah. I say it every single time. And I think that if you're not a person who takes that 1 second to pause your life before you walk into what should be a key moment, and sometimes it happens and you didn't know it, but like usually, right, you know, I think you're A, missing out on what this whole journey's about, but I think B, you're not grasping the importance of being present right now.
Yeah.
And that is something where I hope that when people listen to your show, mine, I hope that they look at that and go, that person has done all these things, but they talked about only 3 things.
Yeah.
And like, I just got off the phone with the founder of Superhuman.
Cool.
And he was like, I'm going to tell you the truth. He's like, Mike, it's not a brand message. My company is about delight, creating delight. Yeah. That's what it's about. And he went in this whole definition of surprise. He said, delight is the definition of delight is the combination of positivity and surprise. I'm delighted because I was surprised positively, versus horror, which is the surprise met with negativity.
Yeah, right.
And the fine difference between those two happens right here. And it's like, holy shit, you are aware, like consciously aware, every single time something happens, that there is an option for you to make this a positive delight or a positive surprise delight, or a negative, not so delightful.
Yeah, right.
And
no, totally.
If someone can listen to the shows and walk away and be like, okay, so if I can just focus on like these three things, life is more manageable.
Yeah, no, totally. That's and I think for us, what we've learned too is that it helps to add the context. It's like, you know, even just saying, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs listen to our podcast. It's always been the case. That's probably our largest base. And we're like,
it's good for business too.
Well, I think the way I think of it is like these people are listening to get little nuggets of advice. Yeah. And so I think that for a lot of people being interviewed, it breaks the script for them. They're like, all right, hold on. Let me think about this for a minute. And usually it's the case like, you know, there's like the entrepreneur's journey and that's always helpful, or like how the idea came together. Because I think people like to have that context of like, okay, what is it really like to start a company or to pivot or to raise money and that kind of thing. But I think when it comes time for advice mode, it's like everyone kind of changes gears and they're like, all right, hold on. Like, let me take a sec to like think about what would be a really good thing for people to carry. And I think that, again, is one of those cases where, you know, just adding a little bit of context allows people to shift gears and like,
it makes them human.
Mode. Yeah, exactly.
So the poignant question for you is, other than the day that you met Steve Polacek and the day that you got your first Domboard t-shirt, what is the most important memory or moment for you in your career so far? What is that? If you could drown down to that one moment where you're like, and it's not saying I made it, but it's that moment where you're like, I have clarity. I have whatever it is.
Well, it actually, it's a great question because it literally just happened. There's a really, so
coming on the show.
Yeah. Right. Here we are.
It's going on in real time.
No, I'm going to bring it back to Steve Jobs because people don't cite Steve Jobs anymore because it's kind of weird, but I think, so what's been circulated a lot is this Stanford speech he gave.
Yes.
I think a commencement speech.
Yep. A very good one, by the way. People haven't Googled
it. Yeah,
show.
It's great. And I've always liked listening to his speeches, like even before everything went down, right? So one of the things he said was that, I don't know exactly, but basically he said, when you look, you'll see that once you look back upon your life, all the dots kind of connect.
Yep.
And it's more eloquent than that, but basically that's what he said. And for 8-Bit, who, you know, we're the ones that produce the Bites Over Bagels podcast, we had that moment this summer where we had a really tough beginning of the year. And had to, you know, do some restructuring at the company. And one of the questions that someone on the team asked, which is because the team's really great at just being authentic and, you know, they don't care. Like, we're a smallish company. They're like, what are you going to tell us today? Like, this is during a company meeting. What are you going to tell us today to keep us from leaving this place?
Good question. It's a great question. You're lucky. Honestly, this is a sidebar. You're lucky to have employees like that.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, if you're hiring people who won't say, what is the fucking deal here?
Yeah. So we've got
hiring good people.
You know, we've got, so Don Borsi Projects, I got two great co-founders and then two managing partners, Heather Brown and Brett Maggie. So there's five of us there to be able to like jump in and we're all like looking at each other and I'm just looking kind of like, crap. Like
the coffee.
I don't. Yeah, exactly. I was like, I couldn't tell you. And so we didn't have response for that, which I think was actually, I mean, that's kind of a moment in authenticity potentially, but effectively what happened, this is why it was kind of great. And a turning point, I think, as an organization is three weeks later, we got everyone together and we realized that everything that we had been building to this point, which we've been around for 10 years, including Bites Over Bagels as a podcast, all these things ladder up to empathy. For us and being a champion of empathy. So it's empathy for the entrepreneur's journey. And even the reason we started 8-Bit was to be better client partners and have a better work-life balance. So it's empathy for people. There's a lot of artifacts around the office that the team has produced over the years that speak to shared vision and looking out for each other. And even at that very moment that all ladder back into empathy. And the more we dug in, the more we realized that we live in a culture that's very sympathetic, not really empathetic, where I don't know if you follow Brené Brown, yep. Who is an incredible TED. She's an incredible person, TED Talk speaker, the whole nine. I'd recommend her books for sure. But she always talks about, you know, the difference between sympathy and empathy is sympathy is when someone's down in a hole and you're at the top of it and you're like, hey, you all right down there? Like, at least it's not X or Y. There's the at least sentence. At least, you know, you've got a family. You know, you're
maybe
having trouble.
You don't even know. You might have just crushed their soul.
Well, exactly. But she says, you know, what empathy is about getting a ladder and getting down in that hole and sitting with them and being like, I don't know exactly what you're going through, but, you know, let me just hug you or just let me like be here with you for this moment because it's important. And so I think what's happened is from a purely Chicago Tech standpoint, And this is where I think it's really, this is a big moment for 8-Bit, is that we've become a very sympathetic tech culture. Like, all these companies
totally agree with you.
Like, if
haves and have nots.
Exactly. And also, it's classic, like, everyone's like, data first. What about the data? Data scientists, machine learning. That's sympathy. It's like, oh, we need to, like, make decisions based on, like, uninformed data points. It's like, users are on the home screen for 2 minutes. Let's get them to 2.5 minutes. Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's sympathy versus getting down in the trenches. And I think this is where user-centered design and all the trends start to coalesce. It's about even great design, to be fair, speak to actually getting down on the floor and understanding what users are really going through. And that, to me, is an empathy thing, not a sympathy thing. And so for 8-Bit, we're trying to now right that ship internally in terms of, like, how do we champion empathy as a culture, as a team with our clients, but also become champions of empathy for the end users.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where this entire movement is going. Is it's there was a Simon Sinek movement that said why first, start with why, and I think there's a Brené Brown movement which is about courage and empathy and getting to the root cause. And all this data and analytics and everything is just a means to kind of get more truth about what users really, really need.
Well, it's been a great show. I hope you
enjoyed it. Absolutely. Absolutely.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's a great, I mean, the fact that you could recognize that and take that away from the moment when someone says to you, why do I want to be here? I think is like that sort of sells the point that you actually have empathy. It's like you empathize with them, but you also empathize with yourself. Like, oh, geez, a non-answer here is better than a bullshit answer.
Totally.
Because they probably leave after the bullshit answer.
Well, and I think for most companies, when management needs to make a structural change, it's like the next flavor of the month. We're like, oh, we're going to get heavier into machine learning or AI.
We're bringing in the bobs.
Or we're going B2B. You know what I mean? Like, usually it's like another flavor, like, oh, let's try this experiment, rather than like digging in and being like, okay, who are we?
Yeah.
Like, what is all this? What are all these artifacts we've been producing over the years? Like, what does it all add up to? So I think we got lucky that it really is the culture we built. And, you know, we've been around 10 years, so it's not like we were here for 6 months and our seed round is running out. But I think there's something to be said about companies doing that as well, is like trying to figure out, you know, maybe you could rewrite your vision and mission statement and that might ladder up to, you know, your culture. I mean, to us it's an ideal thing, but I think at the end of the day, we really believe that organizations that champion empathy are going to be the leaders of every market. Like, that is the next wave.
I've said for a long time, it's you build, which this is the component to make a brand stand up, but you build a great brand and you can build a number of products underneath it and they don't have to touch.
Right.
Which is,
right.
You know, you think of all the major companies right now, they're really brands, and which is what's driving the government crazy, and monopolies. I can't really govern you because you're a brand. You're not actually, you were software when you started, but now you're hardware, but now you buy car. Like, what?
Yeah.
You're a bank. What the hell?
Yeah, totally.
And
for a while, I think that was special, right? Because we didn't used to have a brand thing. Things was kind of like a cool thing that happened, and everyone's like, Helvetica, and like, you know, it just became like, we all became very interested in brands and like how they like do their thing. But I think that, you know, to me, that's one of those things where you got to break the script. There's got to be a new thing that people, you know, hang on to. So yeah, a great brand is great if it's real.
Yeah. But, and I think another thing you just brought up, which I just talked to a very well-known co-founder of a company that's growing. It's new, but he's been around for a bunch of different other companies that everyone has heard of. And offline, we had this conversation about building technology and what they're building and why they're building it and what they're spending and how much they're raising and when they're raising next. And this goes to your point talking about, you've been around for 10 years and you're not just a 6-month-old seed company that doesn't have the time to wait around and you have to pivot madly instead of digging in and be like, what is the problem? I actually think that the companies that, even if money and time is a major thing and there's just nothing you can do about that, those that choose during those marquee moments to spin around like a top and then raise again, and they keep going, and they may be successful, but they will at some point either exit because they had to and their investors will not be thrilled, or they will flame out because they don't have anything rooted into a post that stands through the wind. I was talking to this about the founders, like, now we're talking about tech, which is your world, so you'll get this, I think, even better than probably me who's saying it. You raise money to start your company. He's a repeat founder, so raising the money part was easy. It was a new venture to him. It wasn't just a startup. And he wants to spend the money on all their new product and advancements and different things that clients that they think they can sign will want. Yeah. And yet he doesn't have any sort of dashboard, any line of sight, any real deep understanding of what the sales cycle looks like, what the amount of money spent trying to pursue said client, even though it's a small batch. They don't have that, and most of these companies are spending their early money building something that they have to build to get out, but they're not building product for themselves.
Yeah.
And it's, I just think it's a critical mistake. I think that you are going to run into a shitstorm at some point.
Yeah.
It might be soon, it might be 10 years from now, but if you didn't build and invest in your own infrastructure first, I just think it's, I mean, you have to build the MVP and MMP and things like that to get out, to like get validation. Sure, that probably is your first spend. But before I build my main product and start hiring a ton of people and start selling it, I stop for a second and I assess who are we in this picture, and I build the tools that allow my team and myself to manage it.
Yeah, right.
So that you can stop for a second. You guys know you can stop and you're not going to be gone tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think, you know, to the comment about a poll, like, I think that that's where, when it comes down to the best entrepreneurs or serial entrepreneurs, whatever you want to call them, typically create businesses that are problem-based.
Yep.
And it's crystal clear. I mean, I know, for instance, like Brad Keywell is great at laser focusing everything.
Yes.
You know, like he has a very specific problem statement.
He is a superhero.
It's like a SMART goal. His like businesses are SMART goals. His staff is like how he staffs his businesses are SMART goals. Like, I think that the more focused you can be, from, you know, again, here's what's nice. Anyone who can focus a goal that much, is able to attack the, is able to actually describe what a user will go through.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if it's that focused. Otherwise, to your point, it's like, it's a bunch of feature dev and things people may want or not want. And then a lot of subject matter experts who think they know the itch better than anyone else who just go internally. It's like,
usually never actually scratched.
Yeah,
They're all just very itchy people.
Yeah, right. So anyway, it is interesting, but I think, you know, to your earlier point, I think the ones that last the longest do get it right. And I think that's why companies like Cameo are going to be so successful, because his journey of starting that company started with, how can we test this thing with nothing, like no tech? And I love that, that crew has gone through this like nice evolution of being like, let's make sure this is hot, regardless of like how the market moves and whether this is going to be a novelty or not. I think there's something to be said about, you definitely nailed the, you know,
they built this Cameo like two dudes who got burned on Vine. Oh wait.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
They know the problem. They know it literally.
Exactly.
So I got to talk to you about what I really brought you in here for, which is Tekagachi.
Yes.
We got to talk about this.
Oh man. You were right at the end there.
Dude. Listen, I was right at the top.
I know you are.
I had a conversation with a certain individual who finished on top, Mr. Rigsecker from Centro.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to beat that guy.
He just commented about this on fucking Instagram like a day ago.
No.
I'm serious. So I'm going to give you backstory, and I'm looping this into the 8-bit piece of this. You guys create brilliant, to some people they're gimmicks, they're not, brilliant marketing, brilliant. I'm going to give you guys something fun to do, and then I remember you forever for it. And it's not the first, I mean, the Don Bora shirt might have been the first of those things, but like, there are so many brands that have the ability to do something cool and they do nothing with it. And there are brands like you guys who actually have the opportunity to do something cool. You've got the cool people to interview and you do it. You've got pieces of technology and ability to build something fun. And then you've got a great brand name and logo that lends itself to gaming, which is just fun. And people don't do anything with it. So you build Tekagachi. For anyone who doesn't know, you might still be able to download this app.
I don't even know.
It's basically, what is the actual game? You know, you built it.
Well, you know the Tamagotchi.
Yes.
You guys, you guys are in the studio. I saw a bunch of Tamagotchis on like one of the soundboards. So this is where you like, you have a little keychain thing and you feed the animal and like clean up its poop and like it can die.
Like having a new baby, which I have. That's
exactly
what you do. You just stuff food in its mouth.
You're
and clean
in a real life.
Yes, I am Tamagotchi.
Tamagotchi. So they're huge. They were huge for a while. I feel like they've never really died out. But anyway, we just always thought that was kind of hilarious. And this actually is piggybacks off of a conversation we had with like Threadless like 7 years ago, where one of the guys had a I probably can't even talk about this, but one of the guys had a concept of
we won't edit it
growing a t-shirt, and it starts as like a baby onesie and it's got like threadless designs on it, and then you grow the t-shirt by like feeding it thread, and I don't know. Anyway, we always had this idea to do this tech this Tamagotchi. So anyway, long story short is the Moxie Awards, which is used to be Chicago's big awards show every year where everyone won the same awards every year. Long story short is it went away. And we're like, oh man, we got it. We love that show. So let's get a bunch of the people that would generally be on that show or be part of that show and turn them into 8-bit characters. And then you can feed them business cards and coffee. And if you give them too much coffee, they have to go to the bathroom. And if you give them too many business cards, they're like out of office.
Yeah.
And you're trying to like...
You locked up my inbox.
Yeah. And every time you successfully feed, you know... Every time you successfully answer a correct business proposal, which is the thing that's, you know, happens randomly, you earn, you know, you fundraise for that character. And so it was just like this 8-bit art and a bunch of sound effects and stuff. And so we had this competition on there for about a month.
I'll take it from there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it was a peak moment.
The first couple of weeks, you know, we're kind of languishing around. I believe if I remember correctly, Amanda Lannert, myself, Sean Rigsecker.
Yeah, Amanda's tough. Dude.
Amanda's tough.
She's an army of...
And I want to say Jimmy Odom also was at the top. And it was like, we're just kind of, you know, deal to deal. And I'm just doing it on our phones. And then it starts to like separate. Like Mark Lawrence was there from Spot Hero. There's a few people. And they start to fall to the bottom. And now there's like the big three. And it's Amanda, myself, and Sean Rigsecker. And Amanda... She's like, I don't give a shit. She just is whatever. She's not even doing the game. It's like her friend. She's actually the winner. Like Sean and I are the ones going back and forth. She's actually the winner because the real nature of the game is that other people played it for you, not you playing you.
That's all good.
So she actually won this. Kudos to Amanda for actually being an authentic person.
Oh, I sold this to Amanda. She's like, I don't get why. Like, why are you doing this? And I was like, Amanda, I don't know, but I have a dream of like you coming into a conference room and a bunch of people being
playing
on their phones rudely and being like, what are you doing? Be like, oh, I'm just playing. I'm just giving you some like coffee. You know what I mean? I was just like, that's hilarious. Like,
yes. Or,
like,
and that's what happened.
I just put Amanda in the bathroom.
Like, that's what happened. That's so the then dream. We get to the final couple weeks, final week.
Yeah.
And it's now Sean Rigsecker and I are pulling away. Now, what I didn't know at this time was that Sean had a catastrophic knee injury skiing. And so Sean is now laid up in the hospital with nothing else to do but to play this fucking game on his phone. So I have my team start playing for me. I literally had 2 days of my team sitting in the Tech Nexus office playing Tekagachi during work time.
That's amazing.
And I get to the lead. And here's where I have a problem with 8-Bit Studios. Sean Rigsecker, and there's another side story here, Sean Rigsecker uses an Android phone. As a sidebar, he just bought an Apple iPhone, and he says it's a piece of shit, and he's back to his Android. He's crazy. Wow. That's a whole other conversation. In the app, he found a bug in your app on Android only.
Software doesn't have bugs.
Well, it had something. He found something on the... He told me this, unless he's full of shit. He told me this in his office. When I saw that you were like clearly employing an army of troops... And he has a whole
spending money on Google AdWords.
Yeah. He has a whole team in Toronto, so he could have done the same, but he's laid up in bed. And he says, I found this glitch where I literally could, if I clicked on a certain combo of buttons, it never made me sit out. So I could answer question. As long as I kept doing it, I never had to sit out. So I saw you go boom, 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 boom. In the middle of the night, he's like, I just sat there and went click, 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 click. And I was adding money, money, money. And I'd watch you get to the top and then I'd wait and I'd go off. And as soon as I saw you get there, ding, 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 ding. He waited until the last minute. He thought I was safe. I went to bed that night. And in that night, while he's sitting in the hospital, he clicked his way up $1 million and he won.
Oh my God.
That's the truth. That's a real story.
Did he say that on the show?
No, we talked about. This is me.
We gotta have him back. Yeah. Actually, is he in that room right now?
I wish
him
he
out?
Was.
This is your life.
Who knows? He's flying around South America.
That's amazing. Well,
this is a real story.
We're gonna let go of our entire Android team. That's
that whole team restructuring again.
Actually, maybe it's because maybe he paid him off. I could see him. Doing
he probably
that.
Did.
He's clever.
He's got plenty of dough.
He's like, what is the combo? What's the testing combo that gets me around?
He said, and he told me, he's like, I tried it on my iPhone, it didn't work.
I tried
his
to,
phone, but
for the record, I tried to get built-in. I was like, built-in, I get it. You guys are spending way too much time, money on this Moxie Award thing. Yeah. I get it. Like, and they're like, yeah, it's cool. Like, I know Adam and we had Maria on early on, so they're legit. But I was like, why don't we use Tekagachi as like the like
who's
we'll,
the
we'll just rebrand it as like the Moxie Awards. It's fine. It'll just be a side thing. Like this will be fun.
We can do this with Technori. We can put this thing back in play. I'm game. Are you kidding?
What are we doing?
After the show, we got to stop this interview. I'm serious. So that was the real story. And to go back to the actual point of our whole conversation, it is something like that. That was this a year, more than a year ago.
Yeah, it's 2 years
ago. So it's 2 years ago.
Yeah.
This conversation of hashtag Tekagachi still exists. And there's posts going on right now on Instagram, granted from two very shallow individuals.
That's amazing. That's actually that whole dream has now been fulfilled.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait for Don or C to listen to this because they think a lot of the things we do are a bit ridiculous.
I MF'd the hell out of. I was convinced that he had his Toronto team pounding keys, and he would sink so low to take me out. And when he told me that, I was like, and then I found out he won. And then I found out that he was laid up in a hospital with a destroyed knee. I was like, oh my God.
Oh, you feel bad.
I felt bad. But then when he told me the truth, I didn't feel bad. I still don't feel bad. I should have won.
Well,
Amanda won.
Well, okay. All right. Well, I'll let her know. I mean, her team was all in. It's a shame now that I hear that. She wins a lot of popularity contests from that standpoint.
Yeah.
CEO of the year. I mean, she is legit.
She's legit. That makes sense. Okay, so to finalize our conversation, we've talked about just about everything.
Well, let me draw it back. To your point about that game, I think that's kind of that's where we connect the dots going backwards. We've always tried to do things that kind of break the script that are unique and new, and I think that game's a great example of like there's a lot of ways you can spin up a like fun competition among the Chicago Tech elite or whatever you want to call that, right? Yep. But I think doing it in a way that's very memorable or new, like I would say that more companies could, to your point, exploit that better. Like do something that like people will actually remember or value or have fun with. Like it's okay. Like not everything needs to be this serious conversation about fundraising. Yeah. Like, not everything. And I think that...
Including media coverage.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I think too, that's where there's probably the biggest separation of, if you look at all the companies that are working in digital marketing, they're completely in a completely separate universe from all the companies doing the startups and raising the money here in town. Like literally they don't talk to each other at all. It's either like a D2C market working with like SC Johnson company, or it's like the company that just opened in San Francisco and Boston. Like those two crews are completely separate. And I think it behoove us to communicate a little bit more in terms of like, how do you actually get eyeballs on stuff? Like how do you like build a brand narrative?
We'll want to add one more moment for people to take away. Use the space. Like that line people don't quite get. You've got all this access to stuff. Use it. Like you just...
Totally.
Use the space, man.
Totally.
This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
What should we know about 8-Bit and Bites Over Bagels that we don't know right now?
Yeah, so Bites Over Bagels is in second season right now. So check it out, bitesoverbagels.com. And then 8-Bit Studios is the company that produces all these magical things, including the new Technori Awards.
I'm not kidding, by the way, with that. I think that this is a precursor to numerous shows to come where every year we just do a collaborative. Technori Legends Award is the winner of Tekagachi, but then I'm going to take myself out of the race. I can't ever play it again.
But no, we'll have you be the host.
Okay, I'll host.
Because right now Don shoots in to give the tutorial, but you'll be peeking out the corners.
I would love to just... A little slide, a little creepy slide. I'm very good at the creepy slide, by the way. I'm told that by my wife all the time.
Oh, great.
A little creepy slide.
But yeah, 8bitstudios.com. If you are looking for a company that thinks that empathy should be the number one thing, that's where you should go.
As always, John, this is a pleasure to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Of course.
Thanks for being on.
And when does that come out?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Two weeks you can hear the other side of this coin.
Yeah, and by the way, you didn't talk about the new platform, so now we sound like we're not talking about anything.
I still don't think we're ready to talk about it. Okay, I was forced to push it out.
No, and it's then great. I think it's great.
Nah, we'll get to that on the next show. We need the whole crew back in here. That was a lot of fun.
I agree.
All right, folks. You can learn more about upcoming Technori investments, opportunities. Check out the blog at technori.com. Subscribe to the newsletter. Download the podcast and other episodes at Spotify. Let's look for Technori Podcast. And follow us on social at Technori. You can follow me at Katoon. Boom. That's a wrap.